hello. I wish I was.
Welcome back to that 590 show. Matt Berger and Matt Rocchio behind the microphones. John Giamatti Rudolph behind the dials. Joining us on the Bellman Automotive phone line is a writer for NHL.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Moriel NHL. Mike Moriel, how are you, sir?
What's going on, boys? Well, we're on the program.
Thank you for joining us. We're kind of disappointed that the Blues got knocked out, but we got the two best words in sports going on tonight. We got Game 7. We got Game 7 between the Capitals and the Penguins, and then later tonight between the Edmonton Oilers and the Anaheim Ducks. How important is this Game 7 for the Washington Capitals to finally get past the second round and more importantly, defeat the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, let's face it, the Capitals 1-8 in playoff series against the Pittsburgh Penguins. They have an opportunity here to get over the hump. Obviously, it's been a while since they advanced beyond the second round of the playoffs. It's well documented. It's well known. But I think a lot of the players in that locker room are just focused on what they need to do and what they did do in the last two games, guys, particularly in Game 5 in the third period. I thought Washington really came into their own. And, you know, I was saying this after Game 4 as well. It just seemed to me that Washington started to get their mojo back. You saw the Capitals team that was able to play that solid D, that transition D. Holtby was coming into his own. Let's face it, Holtby wasn't himself in these first few games of this series. But he really started to come into his own Game 4. And then in Game 5, third period, came up with the big, huge saves. Fleury had didn't look as strong, wasn't as strong as he was in previous games of this series, and the Capitals were able to take advantage of that. Capitals showed much more physicality. They came at the Penguins fast. They came at them with speed. And let's face it, Barry Trotz made a real gutsy move, guys, to move Alexander Ovechkin down to that third line, move up Andrei Burakovsky, and the move just paid off in spades. I mean, Washington, let's face it, Andrei Burakovsky hadn't had a goal in the playoffs until that move. Now he's got three goals these last three games. So right now, I like the way the Capitals look. Obviously, you can't discount with the Penguins. They're the defending Stanley Cup champion. They're a team that seems to have the Capitals' number in playoff series in the past. But it's going to be interesting to see how this Game 7 plays out for all the marbles. You know, these are the type of games, you hear it all the time, that these athletes live for. And in a game like this, I don't think you can rely on goaltending. I think both goalies have played well in this series. I think it's just a matter of heart, determination, and who wants it more.
Mike, you mentioned the move that Barry Trotz made in moving Alexander Ovechkin, one of the best players in the NHL, former MVP, to the third line. If you're Barry Trotz, when you come up with that idea, how do you approach a player of Ovechkin's caliber and Ovechkin's, for lack of a better term, ego? How do you sit him down and say, you know what, this is what I'm thinking, and knowing that this could completely unhinge him and maybe completely unhinge the locker room too? That's a very bold move by Barry Trotz.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a great question. And the thing is, and I want people to understand too, is that you look at Alex Ovechkin and the numbers he has in the playoffs this year, they're not mind-boggling. It's nothing earth-shattering. But the fact that Ovechkin was willing to make this move for the betterment of the team, knowing that, you know, I want to win. I want a cup. I'm at a point in my career where stats, personal stats, don't mean much. If this is what I need to do, if this is what the coach, where he wants me to play, if he thinks this is going to better the team, then I'm all for it. So I personally think a lot of credit has to go to Ovi here. Playing on the third line, knowing that he might not get as many opportunities as he does with a Nicklas Backstrom at the top, but obviously it's working out. I think obviously, you know, Barry Trotz, he said that he had sat down with his assistant coaches and came to the conclusion that Ovechkin, you know, obviously the face of the franchise, the most prolific goal scorer of this generation, was being moved down to that third line, and Ovechkin will be replaced. So it's worked out wonderfully for the Capitals and what they've been able to do. But I think a lot of credit has to go to Ovechkin and Trotz, knowing that Ovechkin would make that move, that he was willing to sacrifice whatever it is. Playing on a top line with Backstrom and Oshie, sacrificed personal stats, knowing that overall, the team would be better for it.
Do you think that there's any way that Alexander Ovechkin knows that if this team fails again in the second round, he's going to get the blame? He's going to get the lion's share of the blame. Do you think there's any part in the back of his head going, you know what, if they move me to the third line, maybe I'm going to get less blame if we fail to make it out of the second round, because I'm going to be like, hey, I didn't want to get moved to the third line. The coach asked me, and I did what my coach told me to do.
Yeah. You know, that's another interesting point. I don't think this really bothers Ovechkin too much, because I got to be honest with you. I mean, first-round series against Toronto, he came up with some big goals. Again, he wasn't necessarily lights out. And then in the second series here in the first few games, when the Caps went down 3-1 in the series, Ovechkin was taking a lot of the blame. But every time, you know, post-media scrums and during after morning skates and practice sessions, it just seemed like nothing really fazed Ovi. He was just going out there doing his thing. And again, that's a credit to the athletes, a credit for a guy that's been in the league for some time now. And he's just sick of losing in the playoffs. He knows that his legacy is going to be what he does in the playoffs, just as it is with any other legacy for a great athlete. It's how many championships have you won? How many times have you reached the final? How many times were you in a situation where, you know, you can play for a championship, score some big goals, or make a big play, or become, a vital part of that team? And right now, Ovi might not be putting the puck in the net on the third line role, but the fact that he's willing to sacrifice and sit there, and he'll get his chance again. I mean, if the Caps are able to survive this, to survive the surge that the Penguins are going to produce tonight, if they're able to survive, who knows? Maybe Barry Trotz, to start the conference final, will have Ovi back on the top line, and then he'll be able to make that switch again at some point. But yeah, I do. You kind of think that maybe this is in the mind of Ovi, but I really don't think it is. To be honest with you guys, I think he really is settled in. He's a veteran. He knows that if this is what needs to be done to win, he's going to do it.
Let's talk about the other marquee name in this matchup, and that's Sidney Crosby. Missed a game with a concussion, and then the following game we see him slide headfirst into the boards. But the NHL, they have a rule that, you know, it's not, I guess, under their concussion protocol if they make contact with their head anything other than the ice or another player. The board is another player. It's not the ice, so it doesn't fall under, hey, you know what, maybe I'll take a look at this guy, see if he has another concussion. Do you think Sidney Crosby's playing at 100% or as close to 100% as he can be?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, Crosby said that there was a time when there wasn't much out there or available about concussions, but everyone has been educated about it year after year. Everyone, you know, has been trying to do their best to be more aware. You know, these things are tricky. When he went into those end boards, I tell you, I mean, I was shocked when he actually got up and skated away from that. I'm sure everyone else felt the same way.
If that was the NFL, there's no way that would have happened. If that was the NFL, they would have had someone go out there and they would have, you know, taken a look at him. They would have taken him off the ice and more than likely probably wouldn't have returned to the game. So it's amazing that the NHL, it seems like they've kind of learned from the NFL's mistakes when it comes to concussion, but maybe that's an adjustment they're going to make in the offseason. I don't know.
Yeah, well, right now it is. It's like there's three criteria that you have to meet when they have these concussion spotters. No concussion-related symptoms at rest, no concussion-related symptoms at exertion levels required for competition, and a return to the baseline testing. The team doctor is solely responsible for the decision. So all that criteria, you know, I guess, was met as far as Crosby. And when he went back to the bench, he obviously was coherent, and the doctors are looking at him, and I guess everything was okay. And actually, when he came back to the ice, he looked fine, but you just don't know,
sure,
you know, if there was some type of effect, if it did affect him later on in the game or not. I guess we'll see what Crosby shows up here and what he looks like tonight.
Mike Morreale from NHL.com joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Morreale NHL. Mike, let's head west to Anaheim in Game 7 tonight between the Edmonton Oilers and the Anaheim Ducks. Edmonton, that Connor McDavid, he looks like he's got, you know, obviously future star written all over him. Is he basically the heir to the throne to people like Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin? It's kind of fitting how they're going to be playing first and then him second.
Yeah, it is. And that's one of the matchups that people are talking about. Boy, what if Edmonton were to play Pittsburgh in the Stanley Cup? Oh, man. You know, you have the greatest player in Sid going against maybe the second, third best player in McDavid. But McDavid is something special to watch, guys. You know, he's just incredible. The speed, and it's not just the speed, it's how he's able to think the game going at top speed. That's what makes him such a unique, special player and fun to watch. But I tell you, you know, Anaheim is doing a pretty decent job, and when I say Anaheim, I should just mention Ryan Kessler, because he's the guy that's been on McDavid for much of this series. He's done a nice checking job. McDavid's had his points. I think he's scored in four of the six games so far. But, you know, it's Leon Draisaitl and these other guys that are picking up the pace for Edmonton and getting the job done. So a credit to Coach Todd McClellan. Knowing, you know, how to spread the wealth around, knowing that McDavid is going to get closely guarded by some big, tough players by Anaheim. And I just like the pushback that Edmonton has had in this series, too, because entering it, I really honestly thought that Anaheim was the more physical, was the more physically dominating of the two teams. But Edmonton has shown a lot of pushback, and they haven't taken, you know, a lot of the stuff that Anaheim has thrown at them. They haven't been intimidated, and I think that plays a big role, a big part into where this series stands right now. I do think the best thing that happened to Anaheim, though, was getting that beating, that getting that 7-1 beating. It kind of opened their eyes. I think now coming back to Anaheim, they know they got to take this seriously. Obviously, they were. The media, I mean, just drives home the fact that they've lost five straight game sevens. I don't think that means much to the players. This is a new day, a new game. They just want to go out there and win. The past doesn't matter at this point. That's all for media. But I do think that they understand that Edmonton is a solid team. Even when you hold McDavid down a bit, they got a great goaltender in Cam Talbot who's gotten the job done. Gibson has to come back strong here. He was pulled after allowing three goals on six shots in the first period of game six. So John Gibson has to come into his own here and play really, really well, knowing that Edmonton's going to be full bore heading down on him early in this game.
If you're the Edmonton Oilers, how fortunate are you that you have, you know, in your franchise's history, you were lucky enough to get Wayne Gretzky and all the success that he brought your franchise. And then obviously, yeah, there were, you know, a generation or two of where the franchise wasn't as good. But now it looks like you may have another all-time great that you happen to be lucky enough to draft in Connor McDavid. If you're an Edmonton Oilers fan, you got to be like, what did we do to deserve this great luck? It's kind of like the Indianapolis Colts in the NFL. You lose Peyton Manning, but you're lucky enough to be able to draft Andrew Luck. No wonder their logo is a horseshoe.
That's a great comparison. Great comparison. Yeah, McDavid is a special player. And it's funny because his draft year, I do a lot with the NHL draft as well. And during his draft year, I went around and I polled a lot of scouts about where McDavid, if you were to rank the top 10 players in the league today, and this is when McDavid wasn't even drafted, where would McDavid rank, knowing how good this player is, how generational he is or will be as a player? Where would he rank with some of the best in the game? And I'm talking Sid in the league and Ovi and the rest of these players. And every scout had McDavid ranked in their top 10.
That's
in
amazing.
The league. And he wasn't even selected by Edmonton yet. So
yeah.
that's how good McDavid was prior to the draft, and now when you watch him, you understand why.
Mike Morial from NHL.com joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. Mike, let's talk about the local team here. How would you assess the Blues season? What were your expectations for the team before the season started, and did they exceed them or fall short?
You know, I know they lost some players prior to the season, obviously free agency, some trades that were made. I didn't think it would phase the club too much, but I knew it would be somewhat a little bit of a transition, particularly in goal with Jake Allen earning the starting role. obviously they started out not too well, but then when, you know, the coaching change was made mid-season and Mike Yeo comes in, they were able to, you know, put the pedal to the metal, and they seemed to push forward, and the team was able to make the playoffs. They had a real great run there in the opening round, and then just ran into a buzzsaw in Nashville. So, you know, I thought the power play struggled a little bit. Well, not a little bit, a lot, I guess, in that second round series. You know, the club had some problems catching up. I know the Blues are 5-0 in the playoffs when scoring first before losing game 6 to the Predators. And then they were 1-4 when they didn't. So they allowed that first goal to the Predators in each of their first 4 games in the series, despite playing well at the start. I think defensively, you know, Blues defensemen had 10 points, while the Predators D had 17 points. Alex Pietrangelo and Jay Bouwmeester were held to a combined 3 points, which was somewhat of a factor there in the playoffs. And obviously Alexander Steen's injury hurt the Blues down the stretch there in the playoffs as well. I thought the Blues made significant strides, though, particularly, you know, in goal with Jake Allen and what he was able to showcase in the playoffs, that he can be a true number one goaltender and you know, maybe even a top 10, top 12 in this league when he's at the top of his game. He proved that to a lot of people. And I think Mike Yeo has this team going in the right direction now. I think, you know, defensively, there's a lot of structure there. Not that Ken Hitchcock didn't, but I think there's a lot of Mike Yeo has some experience. Obviously, he led the Minnesota Wild to many playoff berths, led them past first-round appearances to the second round, and I think in St. Louis, he's going to have an even better opportunity with the amount of talent there. They've got some good players in their pipeline coming up. Mike Yeo has always been good with those younger players, so a few of them will be coming up as well. And St. Louis's young core, you know, it's very exciting, you know.
Yeah.
You know, with the Schwartzes and obviously Fabry, he was injured late in the regular season, didn't play in the playoffs, but Fabry is another one that I really like to watch. Great two-way player. So I think there's a lot of excitement in St. Louis and what the Blues have to offer in the coming years, and it's going to be exciting to see what they can do down, you know, in the years to come.
So, Mike, very quickly, who's going to win tonight? Is it going to be Washington or Pittsburgh?
I like Washington in the East, and I like Anaheim to finally get over that Game 7 bug in the West. Similar to with Toronto, I know Toronto, everyone thought Toronto had a good shot, but still a little young, and they're just learning the ropes. I think Edmonton's in the same boat. I think this is Anaheim's time right now tonight, and I think it's Washington's time.
There we have it. Mike Morreale saying, everybody, empty your life savings and put it on the Washington Capitals and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. If you lose all your money, you can add him on Twitter at Mike Morreale NHL and demand a refund. Mike, thank you so much for your time this evening, sir, and enjoy the games tonight.
Thanks a lot, bud. Have a great night.
Thanks, Mike. That is Mike Morreale from NHL.com. We have a text coming in from Butthead. This actually one kind of made me laugh. I'd rather have a Stanley Cup than a great player. Edmonton hasn't had great teams in the past. Butthead, what are you talking about? The Edmonton Oilers were a dynasty in the 80s. They won 5 Stanley Cups, so I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about.
Maybe he's 28.
That could be too. Yeah. Let's take a commercial break, and then coming up on the other side, Rocchio and I are going to go back into the NBA playoffs. Pretty big game tonight in Boston between the Celtics and the Wizards.
We're also going to talk about potentially the first shoe dropping for a new shoe brand.
There we go. Big Baller Brand coming up next right here on that 590 show, right here, 590 The Fan, 105.7 HG2 FM and InsideSTL.com.